I got to thinking, what would I say today? What do I want to focus on? And I thought, what I'd really like to do is, what would I say to my 18-year-old self? Now, I have to go way back. That was 50 years ago. But it's interesting that the world in 1973 was very similar in many ways than the world we're living in today. There's a lot of upheaval, a lot of unrest, there are wars, and there are deep concerns, there is a distrust of government. Well, if you don't remember it, the distrust of government, this is when President Nixon was in office and he was going before a tribunal and saying, I'm not a crook, and it turned out he was. And so these things have always gone on. And so I thought, what would I say? Because the thing I was wanting then, the thing I was searching for, is still what I want now. The difference is I am experiencing a meaningful life now. And to be honest with you, at 18, my life was not particularly meaningful. It had actually sort of gone off the rails. And God corrected that. And so that's what I want to talk about. There are three requirements, I believe, to have a meaningful life. One is to respond well to suffering. We're all going to experience suffering. And it's often how you respond to it that determines how your life will be. The next thing, you've got to have close friends, good friends, friends you can count on. And I learned that the hard way. Because there was a time when I abandoned some of my good friends and took on some who weren't so good. And that meant my life was less good. And the other is choose a life of service to God and others, because it's really through service to others and service to God that we find our greatest meaning in life. Respond well to suffering. In this life, suffering is certain. It's inescapable. Things are going to go wrong. You have to be prepared for that, and you have to learn to respond well to everything that goes wrong in your life, because it's not what goes wrong that determines your life as much as how you respond to what goes wrong. That's the big factor. When I was 15, I lost one of my closest friends. It was in a farming accident. And it upended so many things in my life and caused me to question so many things. And I went through all the stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. And I went through those. And I actually got okay, but there were some big questions in my mind. And I started thinking, how do I want to live my life? And I made some bad decisions. One thing, I decided I just didn't want to push as hard as I had been pushing. At that time, like this was midway through my sophomore year, I was a very good student, near the top of my class, and just doing everything right. And I think the big problem with me, I got stuck in anger. And I sort of turned that anger toward God. I was mad at God. And I want to tell you, if you're angry with God, that's not unusual, and he actually is okay with that. I really believe he is. Now, he doesn't want you to stay stuck in anger. But if you have anger, and you just want to say to God, God, I'm angry about this. God is a merciful God, and he's a forgiving God. And he's going to understand that. You remember, he came in the flesh in the form of Christ, and he knows everything we feel, and he understands us. And I went through this period where I was angry with God, and as a result, I just quit some things because I was mad. And I quit fulfilling some of my responsibilities. And here's the thing, once you choose the path of irresponsibility, problems start piling up. And your life becomes increasingly frustrating and increasingly meaningless. And it's interesting, when you start letting one responsibility go, it's easy to justify letting another responsibility go. And before long, you get on a downward cycle that it's hard to turn around from. So I would go back to my 18-year-old self, actually 15-year-old self, and say, don't let that go. Keep fulfilling that responsibility. Keep pushing through. It's hard. It's difficult. But keep pushing through. Just do all you can. And it's interesting that in a relatively short period of time, I was living a very directionless. I went from being very purposeful, very directed, very motivated, to being almost lethargic about life in a period of several months, actually. Now, my life wasn't bad. It wasn't like I was just living this terrible life that was just awful. It wasn't that way at all. It was just had become directionless and meaningless. I actually sort of started turning toward pleasure. It's interesting, we read in Ecclesiastes where Solomon took a period of his life where he turned to pleasures for fulfillment of his life, and he talks about it later that his life became meaningless because he began to start pursuing pleasures. Now, there's nothing wrong with pleasures as long as you limit them. You know, I have a grandson whose birthday is soon. He'll be 17, won't he? And he doesn't care that much for cake, but he likes donuts. And I'm going to have a donut today, maybe two. But if I keep having too many, then it's going to start showing up. And that can be a problem. And it's interesting to me. I'm about 20 pounds lighter than I was a couple years ago. And I'm going to tell you something. It was a whole lot more fun to put it on than it was to take it off. And but, you know, that's just one example of how if you're not careful and start giving in to pleasures, they can start consuming and taking over your life. Now, my problem is I started consuming some of the worst pleasures, some of the pleasures that can be even more destructive. I was introduced to alcohol when I was 15. And I know now why they say nobody under 21 should have it, because you can't handle it. A lot of 21-year-olds can't handle it. But for me, it was devastating because I would wake up every morning and I wanted to do that. And then before long, I started thinking, well, if I can do this, if alcohol is that much fun, how about some of the other things that were starting to become available? Why not try weed or something like that? And I did. And I liked it better than alcohol. And before long, I was in this cycle where it was an every weekend thing. And once you start excusing certain things on the weekends, then, well, why not just have a midweek? And before long, it was every day. And I never set out for that to happen. I never set out for my life to be consumed by my habits. It's just I sort of got unmoored and was drifting. And once you're adrift, once you lose purpose in life, then you can get caught up in all kinds of things that are just going to be destructive for you. I wish I could say that I saw what was going on and realized the error of my ways and sort of reset myself and pull myself out, but that's not what happened. Something even better happened. God saw me in the pit and he pulled me out. At the time, I was 19 years old, so this was like 4 years in, and I was pretty much just living to get high. I had dropped out of college, and I was working a job. Wasn't a bad job, just not very promising. Wasn't something I was excited about. Now, that sort of described my whole life. Here I was 19 years old, dropped out of college, and it was just nothing great about my life. I'd just broken up. Well, actually, she broke up with me, a girl I'd been dating off and on for 3 years. That was a blessing, it turned out, because she was a bigger pothead than I was. But But it's interesting that I had this routine. I did it every evening. I worked at a place, and I had an apartment, and I shared with a friend of mine who was also my cousin, and I always got off work before he did. And so first thing, as soon as I walked through the door, like 5:30, whenever it was, I would go get a beer out of the refrigerator. Now, y'all, 18 was the time you could do that then. It's 21 now, so, which is not a good thing. I mean, 21's better. Anyway, I would get a beer out, and then I would go turn on the TV, sound down, stereo up, live in an apartment. I could have it up. Everybody living around, they like the loud music too. And then I would go back to get my stash, and I would start getting high. And I would just stay high until it was time to go to bed. And that was every single day. And one day, and I cannot explain to you how this happened or why or the timing or anything else, I just know that one day I walked into my apartment and I started heading for the refrigerator to get a beer, and God spoke to me. Not audibly. I didn't hear a voice or anything like that. I just sensed right then and right there the presence of God in that room. And I listened. I said, God, what do you want? What do you want me to do? He said, well, go ahead and don't open the refrigerator just yet. And that stash that you just bought a couple days ago, I want you to flush it. I said, okay. No argument. You know, the presence of God was so strong, and I sensed His love for me, that 19-year-old who had turned into nothing, loved me enough that His presence was there, and I was overwhelmed by it. And I went straight to got my stash, and I flushed it. I said, okay, what next? He said, get your Bible out. Well, I had one. I hadn't opened it in quite a while. Now, interestingly enough, now I was a believer. I was. I was just one who had gone adrift. And a lot of believers are that way. You know, you might have a time where you're really committed to the Lord, really excited about Him, and then you just sort of go adrift. And that's where I was. I knew God, but I had gone adrift. And He said, get my Bible out. And then sit down, leave the TV off, leave the stereo off, and just sit and read the Bible. Now, David was my cousin, my roommate. He always came home after I did. And anytime he came into the room, he would come in and there would be a beer there, smoke in the room, TV on, sound down, stereo up. This time he walked in, he got about halfway through the room, and he stopped. And I still remember this. This, you know, that's a long time ago. And he stopped and looked around. And then he turned and looked at me. And he stared. He said, Roseman, what are you doing? Now, he did add an expletive, but this is church, so I won't put that one in. I said, David, I've made a decision to turn back to the Lord. Now, David was not a believer. In fact, he made fun of believers, especially the ones who would make a commitment and then turn away from it, and that happened. Anyway, I still remember he turned and stared at me and crossed his arms like this. And for probably 10 seconds, which is an eternity if you're staring, he said, I'll give you 2 weeks. That scared me a little bit. Because I started thinking about all the other friends of mine who had made commitments, and in two weeks they were back with me drinking and carrying on. I said, Lord, what now? What's the next instruction that you've got for me? He said, I want you to go this weekend and break up with all your rowdy friends. I said, okay, I'll do that. And so that day, or that weekend, there were probably, I can't remember now because it's kind of not real distinct memories, but I think there were about 5 of them that I went to see them that weekend, one by one, and told them the decision I had made. And to this day, those friends that I thought I had, I've only seen one of them since then, and then just a couple of times. That was a lesson for me because I found out, okay, I didn't really have friends. I just thought I did. But they weren't real friends. So then I said, okay, Lord, what now? Because, you know, I just broke up with my girlfriend a couple weeks ago, and now I just broke up with all my rowdy friends. I think I need a new set of friends. And I said, what next? And he said, I need you to get connected with me and with good friends. A couple days later, this man knocked on my door. His name was Sam Mara. He was a Sunday school teacher at the church I had grown up in. He said, Dana, we got a great class. We'd love for you to come and join us. Now, he thought he was just coming out of the blue to give me a visit. But I know better, and he found out later that God sent him there because it was the perfect time. I was ready. And I got into that class, and then they had a prayer group that they would meet together in homes or in a parlor at the church or different places. And I got connected to this really good group of friends who to this day are still friends. But then there was this one friend that was really special. And I married her. What was that other girl's name? So that's the second thing. The first thing is respond well to suffering. The second thing is develop close ties with good people. You don't have to have a lot of friends. If you just have a few. And to be honest with you, I'm actually, you wouldn't know it from me standing here, but I'm actually an introvert in that I prefer being by myself. And, you know, I work in my shop. I'm by myself most of the day. I'm only with my dog on my hike. I go golfing most evenings. I walk the course, and I'm by myself most of the time. And then I see my wife in the evenings. And that's some days that's the only person I see. And I'm good with that. But, you know, I've got her. And I've got a few close friends that I see from time to time. And that's, if you have a few close friends who are going to be there when you need them, that adds meaning to life. Now, what's a good friend? One, a good friend is one that stays with you in hard times. You know, let's say your life goes south. And things are just going bad. This is one that says, hey, I'm here with you, even in the bad times. A close friend also is one who will hold you accountable when you mess up, who will say, you shouldn't have done that. You're going to reap the consequences, and I'm going to stay on your case until you quit or until you move into a better direction. That's a good friend. Also, a good friend is one who will enhance the good times. A good friend is one when something good happens to you, they're as excited for you as you are. They're not jealous of your successes. They're not jealous of the good things. They're excited for you. That's how you really tell a good friend and who they are. And number three, choose a life of service to God and others. The greatest meaning we have is when we're serving other people. Jesus said, which command is the most important of all? He was asked, he answered, said, the most important is love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And the second is love your neighbor as yourself. You need to pour your life. Find out what your area of service to God is. And pour your life into it. Now, I'm a preacher here on Sundays. Now, Mondays is my day off. So don't expect much out of me Monday. Tuesday, I'm in my shop. I'm a woodworker, cabinet maker. I also have a studio. I'm an artist. And do you know something? I believe God is just as pleased with what I do on Tuesday as He is with what I do on Sunday. I don't see any difference. It's just a different job. It's a different way to serve. Because here on Sunday, I serve because God has given me some communication skills and a love for the Scriptures. And then I share with you what God has said to me. But on Tuesday, I'm serving people. because people need cabinets. You know, I saw a couple of houses, new houses going up along the way. I won't be putting cabinets in those houses. I'm actually booked for the year. You know, God's blessed that. I love making art. In fact, I had a church that, this is one of my most fun stories with art. I had a church that said, we'd like for you to do a little, they wanted me to do a little piece of art. They heard I was an artist. And so I did a painting of crucifixion, and which I'm actually going to bring a print of it for Easter, because I kind of like it. It's I think it's powerful. And so I did that, and he said, whoa, Dana, wait a minute. Said, we knew you were an artist, but we didn't know you could do that. And so it's interesting that whenever we give our best gifts to God, no matter what it is, it inspires others. And what happened is that church said, you know, now we're going to actually have a feature wall with those three paintings up. And in addition, we're going to remodel the whole room. And so that Sunday school class redid the whole room. And it really just, the fact that they participated in the change made the class better and more enthusiastic. And so when you give your best in service to others, it becomes an inspiration. My grandfather was a farmer and a landscaper. He served God by feeding people. We have a lot of Sunday teachers in our family. My dad was a teacher. My wife was a nurse and a teacher. I have two of my children are teachers. I was reading a post that Margaret had shared that another teacher had shared about how important it is to teach children to write in cursive because there is a connection between the brain and the hands. In fact, I read some research on that just recently, where the connection between the brain and hands is so vital that you actually learn better if you write it out. And so she was going to encourage that. And so her students are going to be better because she's serving them in that way. Never, ever underestimate the value of your service to God and to other people, because it's important. Think about how much this teacher has blessed us today and these singers, because they've given us their gift. They're going to do it another time too. I'm looking forward to it. To find your purpose, because one of the, you know, when I was 19 years old, I thought, what is my purpose in life? Here's how you find it. You know, there's two times in life when people are looking for their purpose in life: when they're 15 and when they're 65. You never thought about it, but when people retire, they need to have purpose in life to keep going. Because, you know, in today's society, they might have another 20 good years. They might. In fact, when I turned 65, I actually sat down and wrote out a 20-year plan. And I really believe that part of the reason I'm here today is because of that. Because I wasn't ready to quit. Now, I did change some things. It's different than what I was doing. To find your purpose in life, begin by fulfilling your current responsibilities. And God leads. It's interesting, God usually doesn't put up a sign and say, this is your purpose in life. I've never seen that sign. But as I began to say, God, what do you want me to do today? What do you want me to do now? As I do that, then he gives me the next step. Scripture tells us that thy word is a light unto my path and a lamp unto my feet. The idea was a foot lamp. When they wrote that, they didn't have ever-ready batteries and they didn't have flashlights. They had foot lamps that actually apparently were just enough light. And I don't know, some people, I heard one guy say he thought maybe it actually was attached to their feet. I don't know if it was that or if it was just enough light to take the next step. And that seems to be how God works. He gives us enough light, enough direction for the next step. And then he says, take it. Take that next step. Lay aside anything that hinders you, because as you go along, you're going to pick up things that hinder you. He also says, don't hold on to the sins that entangle you. Sins are kind of like a spider web. They just sort of tangle you up and hinder you. It's interesting, the word for sin, it's not actually talking about evil behavior. It's actually an archery term that means to miss the mark. And so the idea, whenever you're trying to, it was an archery term specifically, and if you're trying to hit the mark, you've really got to focus on the mark, and you sort of push out distractions. And I think the way what he's saying is, if you want to keep yourself from missing the mark, you've got to focus on the mark. So focus on the things that God has given you to do, and you can fulfill it. And also understand that God disciplines you like a coach does an athlete. And the coach pushes you, and he's always going to try to get a little more out of you. And that's where we are with God too. He's trying to get a little more out of you. It's what your teachers do. You know, you're better singers, I guarantee you, now than you were 6 months ago when the school year started. And she's always pushing you, wanting to get a little more out of you, get a little more improvement in your voice, a little more harmony, a little more together. And she's got that ear that she can tell when it's a little off. And she gives those corrections in that direction. And that's how God does it. To finish it up, suffering is unavoidable. And it's not the suffering we face that gets us into the biggest trouble, it's our response to it. Ask God to strengthen you so that you can respond well. Work to develop close ties with a few good people. Work on those relationships. Live a life of service to God and others, and fulfill your responsibilities. It's interesting, too, that taking on responsibility makes you humble. Why does taking on responsibility make you humble? Because you realize how hard life is, right? And my final statement, there is a clear pathway from taking on responsibility to finding the meaning that will sustain you through suffering.